Hi, I'm Dina Burke, the host of Super Money, a podcast about Bitcoin for total beginners. Welcome to episode 2 of the show, entitled Bitcoin's Daddy. Last week, we covered the very basics of Bitcoin, what it is, and why it's so important. So if you need the foundations of how everything works, episode 1 will be 10 minutes very well spent. Today's show is all about the origin story of Bitcoin. Where did it come from? Who invented it? How was it launched? This epic tale is one of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin. It's just so nuts and pretty hard to believe at times. So it's super fun. Okay, so think back to 2008. What were you up to? I, for one, was up to absolutely nothing good. I had recently graduated from college and had just got my first quote-unquote real job managing MySpace pages for bands, not having any plan for the future or for money or anything, really. I was really into those bohemian like headbands that go across your forehead. I was living in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and I was just like generally thinking I was very cool when I was very not cool. So that was me. Okay, so someone who had a very different 2008 was a person or persons who called themselves Satoshi Nakamoto. Satoshi Nakamoto is the name of the author of a white paper called Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. This was published on October 31st, 2008. And in these 9 now historic pages, Satoshi proposes a system for how this new digital money called Bitcoin could work, solving for a lot of the things that had plagued other attempts at internet money in the past, like how to prevent double spending and how to create a totally trustless system. So I'm going to pause here for a hot minute and talk about how this idea of Satoshi's being trustless is so important. So trustlessness is this concept that people use a lot when talking about Bitcoin and the blockchain. And it basically just means that there's no trust needed between the people that are using it to transact. So for example, when you transact with someone in person, you can pretty much verify that the cash that they've given you is legitimate and you can count it to make sure that they've given you the amount that you need. And when you shop online, you and the merchant are both putting trust in a third party, like a Visa or a MasterCard or PayPal or whatever. That third party verifies the payment and they keep track of the money for you both. So this idea of trustlessness is really critical for peer-to-peer internet money because it removes the risk of the other person scamming you by saying like their Bitcoin never arrived or whatever. So, you know, it's the internet. So like preventing scamming and frauds is priority number one. And Bitcoin is able to achieve this trustlessness because of the way that transactions are verified and then publicly recorded for everyone to see forever on what's called the Bitcoin blockchain. So it's this transparency of the blockchain that keeps it all safe. Okay, so back to our pal Satoshi, which, by the way, is now known to just be an alias. Like the name Satoshi Nakamoto is an alias. There's no person named Satoshi Nakamoto. And this was realized later on. Whoever it was made up this name to shield their true identity, which to this day is still unknown. So yes, the inventor of Bitcoin, worth many billions of dollars, is still shrouded in mystery. And we'll get into a few theories as to why this may be later on. Okay, but first a bit about the context of this invention. So one thing we know for sure about Satoshi is that they were really into cryptography. So a cryptographer is someone who's into super secure communications where only the sender and the intended recipient can view the message. So they're part of this super niche community of people who are into this type of thing. And they published this white paper to a mailing list about cryptography. And only like a handful of dudes cared at first. And then basically only those same dudes cared again when he published the actual software version 1.0 to that same group of people in January of 2009. I'm like really talking about a handful. And yes, they're all dudes. So here we are in the story. A person or persons calling themselves Satoshi Nakamoto comes up with this cool piece of technology in 2008 and sends it out to a bunch of people who could care about this thing. And again, very little fanfare ensues. Okay, now once the software is live, Satoshi starts its engines and gets it all up and running. And part of the way that Bitcoin works is that a new set of coins are created every 10 minutes. And at first, this new set of coins that's created every 10 minutes contained 50 Bitcoin. So here we have Satoshi starting the Bitcoin blockchain, essentially, and capturing the creation of these early coins, and thereby stacking a lot of Bitcoin in the process. So yeah, you can do the math. 50 coins every 10 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So Bitcoin was basically worthless at this stage. So the many, many Bitcoin that this person was stacking mattered not at all in 2009. Of course, that's a totally different story today. But back then, yeah, like they were pumping out this Bitcoin and just like putting them in a wallet. And here is where we get to another amazing twist in the story. So those initial Bitcoin have never been spent. One of the beautiful things about Bitcoin is that we have a complete public record of all of the transactions that have ever taken place using this currency. So we can know for sure that none of the Bitcoin from these early days have ever moved. So let that sink in for a minute. The creator of Bitcoin, which at one point would have been considered the 44th richest person in the world, worth $19 billion at one point, largely thanks to this reserve of Bitcoin that was captured at its creation, they've never spent a single dime's worth of their fortune. So, slowly but surely, people started to get interested in what Satoshi was up to. So Satoshi and the few other Bitcoin enthusiasts set up a message board and started talking to one another, ironing out issues and tweaking the software. Bitcoin is run on open source software, meaning that the code is published openly and anyone can review it and make their own modifications. Those modifications then rely on the consensus of the whole community in order to be adopted. But yeah, it was open, like everyone had access. And this is one of the key reasons why Satoshi could be anonymous. Once they published the first version of the software, it was basically out of their hands. Like they had no ownership, just like no one owns the way the technology behind email or the internet. And the first time the price of Bitcoin moved in any major way was July of 2010, when the price of one Bitcoin increased from 0.0008 cents to 0.08 cents for a single coin. So 0.08 cents for one Bitcoin. That same year, the first real-world Bitcoin transaction was logged. A programmer purchased two pizzas from a Papa John's in Florida for roughly 10,000 Bitcoin. At the time, that was equal to about $41. But today, of course, that number is much higher. It's about $75 million at today's price. So that was a very, very expensive pizza. So also around this time, more and more exchanges started popping up. So exchanges are places where you can exchange dollars for Bitcoin, like basically buying Bitcoin. You can think of this sort of like the currency exchange booths you see at like international airports. It's like that, but it's online and it's trading in Bitcoin instead of like euros or pounds or pesos or whatever. So what this shows is that the currency was gaining wider exposure, and people who weren't able to or didn't want to mine the Bitcoin themselves, like they wanted to buy some. So I don't want you to get caught up in this concept of mining. I did for a long time and it was a distraction. So mining is just the process of creating new Bitcoin. And we'll talk about this in a future episode. But for now, just know that it basically takes a lot of computer processing power and a high degree of technical sophistication to do that, especially in those early days. So people who weren't miners, they wanted Bitcoin. They wanted to buy Bitcoin. And so they went to these exchanges to do that. Okay, so here are some headlines from the years that followed, which is really like Bitcoin's next phase when it started emerging from its little nest of cryptographers into the world. In 2011, organizations like WikiLeaks started accepting Bitcoin as a way to donate. In 2012, Bitcoin was featured as a plot point in the show The Good Wife on CBS. And around this time, we just started seeing a lot of online stores and merchants start to accept Bitcoin as a form of payment. Bitcoin was receiving major press, like outside of Silicon Valley, and it was good and bad. Time magazine published an article on Bitcoin. Gawker published a piece on the Silk Road, which is a dark web drug market where Bitcoin was frequently used as a form of payment. We'll get into this for sure on future episodes. But basically all of this publicity, it got people talking. And by June of that year, Bitcoin was worth over $30 per coin. And it was during this rise in Bitcoin's early days that Satoshi Nakamoto logged off for good. So after hundreds of posts in the Bitcoin message board, they sent their last message in 2011. They wrote to another developer that they had, quote, moved on to other things, and they have not been heard from since. Satoshi used an email address and a website that were untraceable. They revealed no personally identifiable information in any of the correspondence, either via email or on the public message board. The few bits of data that were public about them, that they were a 36-year-old Japanese man, maybe living in Tokyo, like that all seemed pretty suspect when lined up with the time zones that they were frequently publishing within, and also their flawless English, and they occasionally used British spellings in their posts. So there are many theories as to Satoshi's real identity, and I'm not going to waste anyone's time here taking guesses. Until they come forward, if they come forward, there will be no way to know. This person or group, like, they're one of the best programmers and security experts in the world. They knew what they were doing when they hit their tracks. What is more interesting is to consider why they are keeping their identity a secret. So one theory is pretty simple. They've passed away. This would very easily explain the reason for that original Bitcoin being left untouched. Another theory is that creators of alternative currencies have, in the past, not been treated too kindly by the U.S. government. So there's this guy named Bernard von Notthaus, and he created a private currency in 1998, and he named it the Liberty Dollar. So the Liberty Dollar flourished a little bit for a while, but eventually the minting operation that he had set up was raided by the FBI and the Secret Service. There was criminal proceedings and the currency was shut down. And the guy that created it, he was found guilty of creating a currency system that competes with, quote, the official coinage and currency of the United States. So one theory is that maybe Satoshi just didn't want to deal with whatever legal battle they knew was probably coming their way. And if you dig into creepy little corners of the internet, you can find conspiracy theories aplenty. So some popular ones, Bitcoin was created by the CIA, or the CIA has Satoshi Nakamoto, or it was created by some nefarious foreign agent or government to try and destabilize the dollar, et cetera, et cetera. The theory that I like the most is that this person or persons, they so deeply believed in the values of decentralization, that is, the network over the individual, that they remained anonymous in order to avoid the risk of being seen as like the leader of this system. So if they stayed on and Bitcoin got successful, it would have created like a sort of guru or godlike figure at the helm, when really the technology itself needed to be the star of the show. Satoshi knew, like, if this thing were to flourish, there couldn't be a fallible human at its helm. Like, if there were, anything they said or did would probably make the price move, and that would have just destroyed the vision for this decentralized network. So Satoshi made this huge sacrifice instead, and they took themselves out of the picture to let Bitcoin fly, leaving many billions of dollars on the table. Like, that's amazing dedication. So whatever happened, we have so much to thank Satoshi for, whoever they are. And on next week's episode, we'll dig into what happens after these formative years when the drama starts really heating up. Okay, thank you again so much for listening. Please rate and subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcasts. I really appreciate you coming along for this ride. Okay, that's it. Bye for now.